This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. In 1966, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. took the dramatic step of moving his family to a slum neighborhood in Chicago. From there, he launched a campaign of marches into all-white Chicago neighborhoods, exposing segregated housing and demanding the adoption of fair housing practices by real estate agents and the city itself. When a crowd reacted violently during a mid-August march, King commented, "I have seen many demonstrations in the South, but I have never seen anything so hostile and so hateful as I've seen here today." King's efforts reached an impasse in Chicago, but he knew it was just one step in a thousand-mile journey. Ironically, it was King's assassination on April the 4th, 1968, that became the critical step. Within a week, Congress passed the Fair Housing Act. So, a half a century later, what has the Fair Housing Act delivered, and what's its role today? To explore that, I am joined by the Executive Director of Housing Opportunities Made Equal, HOME, Janice Jones. Representing the Cincinnati Board of Realtors, it will be its director of Government Affairs, Mark Quarry. He isn't with us yet, but we're hoping he's going to be able to join us. And Director of the Legal Aid Society of Southwest Ohio, John Schreider. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everyone. Good to have you here today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Janice, let's begin with you. When the Fair Housing Act was passed in 1968, what exactly did it do? What did it instruct?
Well, it did two big things, I think, that the advocates over the many decades prior had been hoping for. It really made clear that, you know, housing based on certain reasons was illegal, discrimination wouldn't be tolerated in any type of housing transactions, which had been, you know, permitted for decades, centuries before. And then it also gave the forward-looking responsibility to affirmatively further fair housing. So that means, you know, it acknowledged that there had been a long history of illegal discrimination in housing. It gave a general apparatus for how to address those, you know, current cases, but then also look forward and said, yes, you know, we've had this, you know, this systemic illegal housing discrimination for many, many decades, and now we need to do things affirmatively to try to unravel those, you know, areas that have been, you know, segregated for so long based on illegal practices.
Well, when this was originally passed in 68, as I understand it, it was originally identified discrimination based on race, color, religion, and national origin. But that's been expanded over the last 50 years. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. So the presence of children or the family status is another area that illegal discrimination, the Fair Housing Act protects against in terms of housing transactions, and then also protections for people with disabilities, which, you know, strangely enough, in this day and age is the most common type of fair housing illegal discrimination we see.
Oh, we'll come back to that then. And what about the status of sexual identity in the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, so the LGBTQ plus community, you know, is not in the Fair Housing Act. So if people are, you know, Googling the Fair Housing Act and pulling it up on their computers, they're not going to see that terminology. But from a fair housing perspective and how we see it as advocates, we look at the term sex. And so are you making, discriminatory type decisions based on a person's sex or your perceived belief on what a woman should do, what a woman should wear, how she should present herself, you know, what her gender expression should be, whether or not a woman or a man should live with someone from the same sex or gender. And so under that prescriptive, you know, broader view in terms of the Fair House being written very broadly, you know, we can say, well, you know, it might be illegal discrimination if someone says, well, I don't think that these two women should live together. I don't think the one woman should have short hair and, you know, and then they live as a couple. So in those cases, we can look and see if the Fair Housing Act is triggered.
Okay. John Schreider with Legal Aid Society, Southwest Ohio. What's your role in this? And how does legal aid get involved in the Fair Housing Act and its implementation?
Sure. At Legal Aid, we're very much involved in helping our clients with housing problems and working on improving communities. And we feel that the enforcement of fair housing laws is really a very important part of having good communities and good neighborhoods. We work very closely with HOME, and we refer people back and forth and have a very good working relationship with them as well as other agencies. So even though our exclusive focus is not on fair housing when we work in the housing area, it is an area in which we do work, and it's a very important area.
Would you give me an example of a case that may come to you, a client who may have asked for help from legal aid, and what they're facing that would fall under this act, and then what you would do, what would legal aid would actually do with that?
Okay, well, typically the sort of case that we don't refer to HOME would involve a threatened eviction. And so, for example, if a tenant, let's say a tenant has a disability and wants their landlord to allow them to install a ramp, if the landlord refuses and threatens to evict that tenant over that issue, we would represent that tenant and raise those fair housing issues in court if necessary.
Okay, so we're getting back to the disability question here. And so you would potentially try to negotiate it with the landlord.
Correct.
But if that wasn't possible, you'd be willing to go to court.
Absolutely.
On that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So, Janice, tell me now, you know, how has HOME's work in this area evolved over the last 50 years? Not a blow by blow, but broad strokes. And what is it you're doing right now to enforce the fair housing law?
Well, so when we started in the late 60s, when we incorporated, we're one of the oldest fair housing organizations in the country because we incorporated as a fair housing agency shortly after the act was signed. So in that day, what we saw from looking back over those years and people who were here at the time and remember, you know, a lot of things were just much, you know, more overt. You know, people were, you know, clearly felt that it was within their rights to discriminate against whomever they wanted to. And so a lot of the cases that would come through the front door are people who, you know, would say, you know, this person doesn't want to, you know, this landlord isn't going to rent to me because I'm, you know, black. And, you know, we would do the investigation, and then, you know, the landlord might say, well, yes, it's my right to rent to who I want to rent to, or something of that nature. Over time, we found that illegal discrimination has become much more covert. So our testing process of going out and testing the housing market has evolved in our methodology in terms of how we go out and gather evidence of illegal discrimination. So we'll look at a number of different ways to investigate, look at the data, you know, bring together, you know, what the complaint says and what the person who comes to us says versus, you know, other transaction or attempted transaction in the testing process, and go from there. So it's a lot more looking at, you know, the circumstances, things like, you know, are people treated differently? You know, the providers giving misinformation during the you know, transactional process of, you know, a person trying to see a unit. And it just gets a lot more in depth in terms of, you know, people making blatant, you know, racist or sexist statements.
When you're talking about the investigation process, mm-hmm. I know that at one time you would actually send pairs of people out
mm-hmm. who we still do.
Okay. Why don't you just explain that? Because some people may not know exactly, you know, that's sort of the nitty-gritty of one of the things you do to investigate this kind of thing.
Right. So we do testing. We, you know, the Fair Housing Act, you know, is broadly enough written so that we have the opportunity to perform testing on the housing market in the greater Cincinnati area. So if we get a complaint, we'll investigate that complaint. One of the tools we may use is testing, where we do send out people of similar backgrounds, financial situation, you know, all that. But the only difference would be one is considered as part of a protected class and, you know, one is considered a control. And so we see if there's differential treatment and we see if they get different information, if they're told different prices in terms of what the deposit might be or what the lease is, or if they're told, for example, that, you know, steered from one property to another because, you know, they, you know, all the families with kids live in this building. So I'm going to show you these units, not the unit that you actually came to see. And we see what their experiences are, and we, you know, bring that back in, and we see what we see. We see if there's a way for us to build a case. We see if it's something we want to file with Department of Housing and Urban Development, or maybe it's something we want to refer to Legal Aid and have a conference with them about. We also see if we want to file in our own name in terms of if we feel home has standing in the case. We might bring that in federal court. We might feel like, you know, we want to refer this person to a private attorney, or we might feel like ultimately at the end of the day, you know, this might be something that's more of a landlord-tenant relations issue, and so we might refer it to mediation. So we just look at all of the evidence that comes in and make a determination on how we think we can best address the issues that were raised by this particular client when they call us or email us or Facebook us or come through the or walk-ins. So,
okay, John, do you have a comment on this?
Well, I'd just like to comment on one of the things Janice said a moment ago, and that goes to the acceptance of fair housing laws by the community and people in America. And I think the introduction, Dan, that you gave was very appropriate because it referenced how Dr. King and other civil rights leaders faced great opposition back in 66 and 67 prior to the passage of the Fair Housing Act. And there's polling data all the way back to that time that has inquired about public acceptance of fair housing laws. And back in 1968, the majority of Americans were not in favor of the Fair Housing Act. There's very solid polling data about that. And the good news is that as time has gone by, the acceptance of fair housing laws, both with respect to race and the other categories, has really grown. And the vast majority of Americans really do support our fair housing laws, and I think that's a very important and very good thing.
I'm going to need to take a break, but John, before we do, before I lose this thought, the sort of evidence that home can gather through these testers, is that evidence that can be introduced in court?
Absolutely. The courts have long recognized that testing evidence as critical.
Okay. So that can be taken and introduced. 2018 marks the 50th anniversary of the United States Fair Housing Act. In that time, the act itself has been expanded to include additional groups, but also the forms of discrimination have changed as well. But make no mistake, the act is still relevant. To discuss the role of the Fair Housing Act in 2018, I am joined by the Executive Director of Housing Opportunities Made Equal, Home, Janice Jones, and the Director of Legal Aid Society of Southwest Ohio, John Schreider. Mark Quarry was supposed to be with us from the Board of Realtors, but has been unable to join us. So I want to ask a question. John, how has, in this community anyway, how have the professional realtors responded over the years to the challenges of fair housing?
Dan, I think it's fair to say that initially the realtor community was a little slow on the uptake, but I think Janice would agree with me that certainly for quite a long time now, the professional realtor associations have been very, very dedicated to the proper practices that are required by the Fair Housing Act. And I think it's really they are really to be commended by that. They do trainings and all kinds of things to make sure that they do it right.
In fact, speaking of training, Janice, last year, if I'm not mistaken, when I was at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, a group of about 135 realtors came in. You spoke to them. You welcomed them and gave some background. And they were engaged in our implicit bias training. And that's the type of training I think at least local realtors have committed themselves to.
Yeah, that's right. So we at home do about 130 to 140 trainings a year for housing providers. So that's everything from realtor associations to realtor firms to property management companies to landlord associations to maintenance groups, where we go in, you know, a lot of time at their request to do a fair housing training. And, you know, a significant part of our program model is to, you know, do the fair housing training, you know, outline, you know, the nuts and bolts and, you know, look, you know, explain any trends, but then open it up to them as practitioners and housing providers to ask us questions about things that they're seeing or things that they're unsure of, or questions that they might have about, you know, things that they've seen with colleagues in their practice. So we devote a significant amount of our resources as an agency to offering that training, and most of it is, you know, free of charge, or we, you know, might, you know, charge a minimal nominal amount for materials and that sort of thing.
John, and both of you could comment on this, but start with John. Have the forms of discrimination changed over the decades?
Absolutely. And as Janice mentioned, discrimination has become more subtle. I think a moment ago, Dan, you referred to implicit bias and indirect bias, and those are things that are still out there. And oftentimes discrimination these days, based on race, discrimination based on gender, discrimination based on disability, can be very subtle. And you can have situations where, for example, landlords are using selection criteria that have that disfavor members of minority groups or women with children or people with disabilities. And, you know, if those selection criteria are not really closely related to predicting whether someone's going to be, say, a good tenant, those practices should change.
So, for example, on this area of families, you know, maybe single parent family with children, what does data show about whether that's a legitimate factor for a landlord to factor in on that?
Well, so I think there probably tends to be an assumption by people, sometimes unconscious, that single-parent households are less reliable. And I think that that is not necessarily the case. And it's, you know, I think you really need to use the kinds of selection criteria that really predict accurately whether someone's going to be a someone who can be a good tenant, for example.
Janice, where is the federal – this is a federal law. So where in the federal government is enforcement of this law lodged? What agency is responsible for this?
Sure. It's Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, as most people know it as. And so, you know, most of the fair housing – so if we were to file an administrative complaint today – we would be typically filing a form 903, which we would refer to the Department of Housing and Urban Development to investigate. Now, they may go ahead and refer it to the state agency that's substantially that views the Fair Housing Act substantially the same as HUD does, which is the Ohio Civil Rights Commission. But generally speaking, you know, HUD is the broad effectuating agency that is over the nuts and bolts of the Fair Housing Act. So a lot of the HUD funding is in one way or another supposed to be designed to effectuate the goals of the Fair Housing Act, whether it be funding an agency like HOME or funding a local jurisdiction, a city or a county, with block grant dollars. So it's a wide range of particular tools that HUD uses, in order to ensure fair, safe, and affordable housing to the community. That's what the agency is designed to do broadly.
Well, currently HUD is led by Ben Carson, and part of the Trump administration. And, you know, very honestly, President Trump, some of his properties in New York City have been charged with discrimination over the years. I'm not sure there's rent control in Ohio. I'm not aware of it, or at least in our area. But he has run afoul of that. What's the state of things under President Trump and Ben Carson in terms of enforcement of this act?
Well, you know, we as a fair housing organization, as fair housing advocates, and, you know, being part of a longer movement to bring opportunity and safe, affordable, fair housing to as many individuals as possible, you know, we take them as they come. I mean, you know, different administrations have different viewpoints on what the act was designed to do, how it's structured, what's the best way to meet the goals of the act. But we as fair housing organizations, you know, we see the folks that come through our door every day, that call our phones every day, all day, and we go in, roll up our sleeves, and do the best we can to get them what they need. And administrations come and administrations go, but we've been here for 50 years, and we're going to keep pushing.
Well, one of the things I'd like to raise is the fact that recently HUD removed from its mission statement the phrase inclusive and sustainable communities free from discrimination. John, has that had any practical impact down on the local level?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Dan. That was a very unfortunate step to take. I go back to the polling data, and I mentioned earlier we have polling data every year or every 2 years nationally that shows that support for fair housing goals are increasing all the time. The people, regardless of background, are more and more in favor of the goals of the Fair Housing Act. And the goals of the Fair Housing Act, regardless of what it says on the door at HUD, include promoting diversity. The goals of the Fair Housing Act are about promoting inclusiveness. And the good news, I think, is that Americans as a whole are more and more in favor of that. And I don't think we can worry too much about an occasional wrong turn by one administration or another.
So you're sort of seeing it the same way Janice is, that you're taking the long view.
That's right.
They've been there 50 years. Legal Aid has been here even longer,
since
right?
Since 1908. We're not going away.
So ups and downs depending on a particular administration's policies. Let me turn our attention now to this law is 50 years old. To what extent has it actually in practice changed things? And if you could improve it for the future, what would you do? Because let's face it, there's still a lot of segregation in our housing patterns in this community and really in almost every urban community. So Janice, how would you evaluate the effectiveness of this law over 50 years? And would there be something you would do to improve it?
So when I look at the long history of discrimination, you know, that literally goes back, you know, several hundred years, and the last 50 years of the Fair Housing Act and other civil rights, I think that, you know, there is an opportunity to improve. And I think the goal of the Civil Rights Act and the Fair Housing Act in particular was to constantly be pushing for more just, more equitable, more, you know, fairness in our communities. So with that said, I think it's not that we're going to get to an end point and say, okay, we've reached, we can stop what we're doing in terms of pushing for equity and justice, because I don't think that with such a long history, that the act was designed to combat, that we can fairly completely evaluate the Fair Housing Act at this point. That said, you know, I think that there are opportunities for communities, neighborhoods, cities, counties to look at their populations, look at where their concentrations of poverty are, and look at some of the demographic trends over the next, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, and make the determination of whether or not it meets community goals on the long range term to have certain areas, certain parts of their communities so deeply impacted by segregation. And doesn't it make sense as more of us become more diverse that we re-up, we level up our efforts to make our communities more inclusive and fair?
John?
So the data does show, the polling data does show that for whatever reason, white Americans are a little less in favor of inclusion and diversity than, say, African Americans or people of Hispanic backgrounds. And I think that's an area for us as a society to work on. And there's a role for the federal government in that, but it's also, at the end of the day, it's a local issue. And I think we have to celebrate our communities that are diverse and inclusive. You know, Home from time to time does studies about neighborhoods in the Cincinnati area that have been diverse and integrated for a very long time. And that's a very important thing to recognize. And those neighborhoods that we've had all these years, need to be applauded and recognized.
Yeah, those, and it's very interesting, those studies. It's about the neighborhoods who aren't just statistically passing through and look statistically diverse, but the ones who have made a commitment and have stayed inclusive and diverse over a long period of time. And those are some really fascinating studies that have been done. So I want to thank both of our guests, Executive Director of Housing Opportunities Made Equal, Janice Jones, and from Legal Aid Society, John Schreider, who have been with us today.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.